The board returned from executive session at 11:09. We'll do a roll call to ensure board members and staff are all present. Dr. Bustillo?
Here.
Pardon me, I think the recording may have just kicked in, so excuse me for repeating this, but we are at 11:09 back from executive session, and we're doing a roll call of board members and staff. Dr. Bustillo just noted her presence. Mr. Leone?
Here.
Mr. Greer?
Here.
Mr. Barton?
Here.
Dr. Hike?
Here.
Ms. Crowley?
Here.
Ms. Bryant?
Here.
Ms. Richardson?
Here.
Dr. Sinish?
Here.
My name is Judy Chepius, and we are also joined by Mr. Harris, our Assistant Attorney General. Dr. Bustillo, the meeting's yours.
So we're in discussion now with case 2413, Kristen Uraznik. We're hoping Mr. Greer has come up with a...
I would love to know what everyone else thinks about this case. I've said what I think, and I think Dr. Bustillo agrees with me, but I'd love to get other perspectives.
I tend to be in agreement with you on the letter kind of causing a little bit of an issue here. I think without that, I would probably be more along the opinion of dismissing the case, but you know, we talk about, you know, what the definition of a physical therapist is. And in that letter, you know, regardless of whether she was providing treatment or not, it was written as a physical therapist. And that to me crosses the boundary. So that's where I'm kind of struggling with where to go with this as well.
So. I'm actually really struggling with that letter because here's the way I see it. I don't think that letter, if you remove the sections that Dr. Uraznik claims are fraudulent, suggests or creates any kind of a patient relationship with the complainant. And I think that as a former physical therapist, she could have written that letter as a physical therapist who had treated her and said those things. My concern is, number one, it seems very up in the air as to whether or not we can figure that out ever. And so that concerns me, right? But that is the big question in my mind, because if we look at our principles, right, the question for our ethical principles is whether or not this relationship started while there was a provider relationship. And this case in my mind is a little easier on that question because it's a hospital setting. There is a very clear stop to it, to the records, and it sounds from the testimony we have like there's some kind of a break there. Now, the allegation from the complainant is that there was an informal treatment that happened after, right? But frankly, I don't, given the messages that we're seeing, I don't know that I find that super compelling. And so in my mind, that's really the issue, right? Is this highlighted, and in particular, it's this highlighted section at this beginning of the second paragraph that says, since 2023, I have been involved in his medical history and recovery, that makes it sound like she's currently following him as a physical therapist. And in my mind, I think that's what the board has to figure out, because if that is fraudulently added, then in my mind, this is a dismissal because there wasn't a concurrent relationship. And if there was not a concurrent relationship, then I don't think there's a violation of the ethical rules. I think it's poor judgment. I think this is as Mr. Greer said, this is a great example of why these things are a huge problem in professional circles. But our rules say a concurrent sexual relationship. And the evidence seems that it's not concurrent unless that treatment continued after. And the evidence I see of that is this letter.
I agree with Josh. I think the relationship started after
I think in terms of the treatment, the patient provider aspect for this therapist, the therapist area is an inpatient neuro. And in terms of treating the patient, like after the fall, that is not her area in terms of orthopedics and musculoskeletal. And so I think when we consider that, I think that she was probably, her treatment was more as a girlfriend. I do agree the letter is a head scratcher in terms of the therapist aspect, but it bothers me that potentially this letter was altered, edited, and you can see the language differences. The highlighted areas are not the same language. There are errors in the spelling. There's no errors in anywhere else in the letter. And there's also capitalization where it doesn't make sense in the parts that are highlighted. So it does appear altered to me, and that bothers me that's kind of thing happens. And so that I then plays into the question of the complainant. And when I review all 408 pages, I see a lot of things here that I'm very concerned about. So I agree this case is ugly, and I agree with Josh Greer, Mr. Greer, about trying to figure this out. And it really bothers me to read this content and consider that the board is being used for this purpose.
For the past three similar cases, and none of them are similar, all three of them were disciplinary orders that we issued. I think there are significant mitigating facts in this case that allows us to deviate from our prior adjudications. I think they're looking at, what Giovanni said, there was a clear break. The licensee is a hospitalist. There was a clear break. And yes, the temporal, how soon the relationship started is troubling to me. And the fact that the patient was receiving physical therapy services from another provider, that's troubling to me. I do believe there is a clear break in the patient-therapist relationship. The letter troubles me, but when I look at how this case came to us, I do believe that it was brought in bad faith. I do believe that their licensee probably needs some continuing education on boundaries. I don't think the 2 hours and 13 minutes that she got is sufficient. And I would move that we enter a non-disciplinary order ordering her to take 15 hours of continuing education in professional boundaries and medical ethics. I would recommend, but not order, the PBI ME15 course. But I'm not going to order that. She can take whatever course meets that. The 15 hours, you can get that however she ranks. I think that is a good course, or Pro B does a similar course. But that would be my motion. Non-disciplinary, 15 hours of continuing education.
Is that 15 additional on top of what she's done?
15 additional on top of what she's done. I'd give her 9 months to complete.
I'll second that.
I'm sorry, who seconded that? Dr. Hike? Thank you.
So, Mr. Gurr, just so I understand, are you basing that off of the 2044-10, engaging in soliciting a sexual relationship?
I'm not finding a violation. Okay. I'm not finding it's non-disciplinary. I'm not finding a violation. It's non-disciplinary. But I think this therapist, and maybe she's just received a seventh-month course in why we don't have relationships with patients. But I do think that additional education will be appropriate. I think it's consistent with how we adjudicated other cases. If we didn't have the mitigating circumstances that we have in this case, I think I would be looking for a disciplinary order and doing the ME22 course like we've ordered the past three cases that we adjudicated on this topic. This is a boundaries issue. This is a medical boundary issue, and that is a issue that we've seen come up a lot. And frankly, you know, if this was a male therapist and a female, you know, I think people would look at it a little bit differently. But I do take into consideration that I do think this complaint was brought in bad faith. I think this was a threat to attempt to harm when the relationship wasn't turning out the way the SY thought it was going to turn out. And that was the reason that we even have this complaint. But that doesn't, in my view, cover up the fact that we do have a serious boundaries issue that needs to be addressed here.
Okay. I you know, my inclination is to dismiss it. And I see what you're saying, Mr. Greer, but you know, when I look at our at the things that we have here, right? Mistaken judgment doesn't necessarily come into it, right? The question is whether there's a sexual relationship while a provider-patient relationship exists. And I think I'm inclined to believe that because of the way that this was brought and because of the allegations of fraud, I'm inclined to believe that that's not true, that there wasn't a relationship while the provider-patient relationship exists. And then when I look at the other options, making sexual advances and requesting sexual favors with patients, I don't think that there was a patient relationship at this time. And then when I look at the ethics standards, you know, it says acting in a trustworthy manner towards patients. I don't see her being deceptive or untrustworthy here. I see her making a judgment call that I think was probably not wise. And I think that's true. I think that's good advice. But I don't think that, we should take board action on good advice. So I that's kind of where I am. And my thought is if I don't see a violation here or a potential violation, and what I see is kind of poor social judgment that I hope this experience changes, then my inclination is to look at this and to say, okay, there's not a violation here. Our job is to find out if there's a violation, so maybe we dismiss it. That's kind of where I'm leaning, but I'm open to be convinced the other way. I mean, I do see a lot of what you're concerned about, Mr. Greer. You're right. This is a case study in why these kind of professional personal relationships are so frequently a disaster, and it has been an enormous headache for us on the board. And so I'm really cognizant of that, and I'm really torn just from the board perspective because I don't want to put us in a situation where we are playing referee to people's bad dating relationships. But I also recognize that we have an obligation to fulfill these responsibilities and to enforce these rules when they exist. But in my mind, the best way to protect the board from being the referee is to make it really clear that look at that language and say, if there's not a current provider-patient relationship, it's kind of not our circus, to deal with. That's kind of my inclination.
Thank you, Josh. And that would be somewhat inconsistent with how we adjudicated some of the other cases that we've listened to.
It may be. Yeah, I think it would be a little bit of a change from what we have done in the past. But I do think I am increasingly concerned. Like, we've seen a lot of these. And frankly, every time we see these, they look really questionable. I know we all have a lot of concerns about them. And frankly, I've spent a lot of time being concerned about these since these started showing up. And I think that's, as I've really thought about it more, I really think that's probably the way to go. But you're right. It would be some form of a change in course from what we've done in the past.
And this one, in my math, looks like he was discharged on August 23rd. And under the best case scenario, the relationship maybe not started, but was well on its way to starting by September 10th.
Yes.
And that is really, really, really close. And so that makes me think, when did this relationship started? The licensee, I mean, the complainant said, hey, she texted me during treatment and never stopped. There's evidence in her narrative that that is true. We didn't receive the text messages from the outset of the relationship, and I think those would have been a little more helpful in understanding when the relationship began than the ones at the end of the relationship. But you know, we're talking 2 weeks. 2 weeks after discharge, they are well on the way to dating, and that makes me very uncomfortable. And when you look at the provider-patient demographic, you know, I know Dr. Hyde teaches all his students that you don't do this. You know, and warning flags should have been going off. And she knows that now. She lives in the future too. She knows that now, but this was one that I'm very uncomfortable with how the relationship started. I'm super uncomfortable with how it continued. The fact that she's writing a letter for him that doesn't mention that she's a girlfriend. I'm uncomfortable on the complete other side of how the relationship ended and how we got this complaint. Said, I hate this case. Hate everything about it. I don't want to punish her, but I think that a significant education in boundaries is appropriate here. Dr. Hyde.
Mr. Greer, you mentioned mitigating circumstances in this case and how this case might be different from the other three cases. Can you outline that for us non-lawyers? I've read materials.
A mitigating circumstance is something that lessens the severity of the consequence. And so here, I think there is a boundary violation. I think there is a blurring of the roles between the physical therapist relationship and the personal relationship. I don't think it arises. I agree with Mr. Barton. I don't think this arises to unprofessional conduct. Because of, you know, the reasons that Mr. Barton articulated artfully. The main mitigating circumstance in this case is what I perceive to be the bad faith in which the complaint was made. This is one where, you know, it makes me upset that the complainant brought this case, because I don't think his intention was to remedy any harm to him. I don't think the intention was to protect the public. I think the complainant's intention was to get back at an ex-girlfriend who had broken up with him and refused to communicate with him. And that's my perception. I could be wrong on that, but that's how I perceive it. Unfortunately, I think he identified an issue that we are concerned with, and physical therapy throughout the nation is concerned with this boundaries issues. And we've seen it in three other cases this year. All of those three cases that we adjudicated were disciplinary cases. But this one, because of the bad faith in which the complaint was brought, I see that as a significant mitigating circumstance that makes this different than the three prior cases that we adjudicated.
Thank you.
There's a paragraph from the Code of Ethics that I just found that might be helpful for Mr. Barton. And it says, a physical therapist shall not engage in any sexual relationship or activity, whether consensual or non-consensual, with any patient while a physical therapist-patient relationship exists. Termination of the physical therapist-patient relationship does not eliminate the possibility that a sexual or intimate relationship may exploit the vulnerability of former patient or client. And I don't know that that's, you know, I don't really believe that that happened to the full extent that the paragraph is really talking about, but it does go to the fact that terminating your patient therapist relationship may not end your responsibility to that person.
And I do think, Dr. Basile, I think that's the fundamental question in my mind, right? Is there some kind of a professional relationship or a professional power dynamic that would suggest that this 2-week window is too small? And I get it. I know we have struggled with this over the years, but the more that I have looked at it and thought about it, the more that I have thought of it, I think it is a really messy problem. And when we look at the guidelines that we have, you know, I think the easiest way to draw that line is concurrence or unless we have some kind of real strong evidence the other way. And here I just don't, you know, and part of it is we just don't have the information, right? I don't have text messages from the beginning. I don't know whether those were personal or romantic. From what the respondent and the complainant have said, I don't really know, that they're going to be able to tell us, because it sounds like neither of them have a great memory of how this thing started months and months and months ago. And, I get that concern. But I don't think, you know, my concern is the only line I can see in the rules that we have is, are you currently treating or is there some reason for them to believe you will be or are? And I don't think that was true here. And that's kind of what's pushing me toward the dismissal. But I know we've heard from most everybody, but you know, I get that there's a lot of other takes to have on this. So.
Any other thoughts? So we have a motion on the floor and a second. Are we ready to vote? Okay, Judy?
In case 2413, Kristen Urodzianek, PT, it has been moved and seconded to issue a non-disciplinary order to include continuing education, which shall be completed in 9 months. Courses must be pre-approved and may be completed online and do not count towards renewal requirements. The continuing education shall be completed in the area of professional boundaries and medical ethics for a minimum of 15 hours. Dr. Bastillo.
Yes.
Mr. Leone.
Yes.
Mr. Greer.
Yes.
Mr. Barton.
No.
Dr. Hike.
Yes.
That motion passes.
So the board will be in touch and let you know how to go about choosing your courses. Okay. So we're going to move on to case 2414, Pablo Ruiz, PT. And I believe this is Mindy.
Yes, it is. And I believe that Leah Shakshar is present representing Mr. Ruiz. She was on the line earlier.
She's there. She's muted.
Okay. We are here. We are here. Thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes. And is Mr. Ruiz with you?
He is with me. Also, his wife, Kay, is present in the room. And he is here beside me.
Okay. I'll just do a briefing of the case. This case was opened after reviewing a complaint that was filed by Mr. Ruiz's patient. Her initials are HR. She alleged that Mr. Ruiz engaged in inappropriate touching and comments during treatment, which made her feel safe, unsafe, and uncomfortable. Staff identified the following possible statute violations that may apply: ARS 32-2044-12, failing to adhere to the recognized standards of ethics of the physical therapy profession as it relates to Principle 2, a physical therapist shall act in a trustworthy manner toward patients and clients and in other aspects of physical therapy practice. And Principle 4, a physical therapist shall exercise sound professional judgment. Mr. Ruiz received a copy of the investigative report and provided a supplemental written response, which was included in your review materials as Exhibit 4. This case is for your review.
Great. Is the patient HR going to be present?
No, she had indicated. Okay. Yeah, I don't believe she's changed her mind. I will just double check. HR, are you present today? Yeah, she had indicated to me several weeks ago that she did not anticipate participating.
Right. Ms. Shakshar, would you or Mr. Ruiz like to make any opening comments?
I would. Thank you. I'm here together with Mr. Ruiz, who's present with his wife, Kay, of 42 years. She's also the practice office manager. This case took a bit of a circuitous path from the initial complaint. So I'm going to address the initial complaint and findings from the investigation separate from what ultimately was found by the investigator. So for the initial complaint, the patient had claims of inappropriate and unprofessional conduct. Mr. Ruiz unequivocally denies any allegation that he was inappropriate or even remotely suggestive with this patient or any other patient for that matter. He's been in practice for 42 years, and he's never had a patient file a complaint with the board against him before. To put it mildly, it's been unbelievably stressful for him and his family. And obviously we recognize and appreciate the board's needs to take these types of allegations seriously. Fortunately and correctly, the investigator found by a preponderance of evidence that the allegations were not supported. So not more likely than not, it didn't even hit the 50% threshold. I think most telling is that the patient herself denied that there were any sexual advances. Her complaint was that she felt uncomfortable due to questions about what her weekend plans were, where she was going, how he was lowering his voice when he was speaking to her. Mr. Ruiz is in no way trying to undermine the subjective experience that this patient was having. But to the untrained individual, she had an absolute misconception of what was going on. He was approaching this patient, keeping in constant contact, which was one of her complaints, that he had constant physical contact with his hand on her body at the whole time as he was maneuvering around the McManus table. He was lowering down to speak to her because she was prone on the table, lowering his voice so he didn't startle her, and trying to create a therapeutic and calming environment for somebody who was in a great deal of pain. As the investigator agreed, all of these approaches are consistent with accepted techniques, and he was using mindful practices that were in the best interest of this patient. There was a phone call, follow-up phone call that was noted as a concern. We never received any recording, only a transcription of that phone call. But ultimately, what was in that phone call was that Mr. Ruiz asked if there was anything he either said or did that was contrary to her that resulted in her suddenly and abruptly canceling all her remaining appointments. I think this was incorrectly construed to look like some type of admission of guilt. I want to put it in the proper context because Mr. Ruiz doesn't have that many patients self-discharge, but the handful of times he does, it's his practice and a requirement of the board to follow up with the patient. He was aware that this patient was in a lot of pain, but she was improving over the visits that she had, and then she abruptly canceled the appointment. There are two primary reasons that someone would cancel an appointment. One, they think they're better and done, which was not the case, at least from Mr. Ruiz's clinical assessment. Or two, they're upset about something with the practice. It was appropriate for him to follow up. He just wanted to be sure he didn't say or do something that was upsetting to her. Those are very broad categories. And there was nothing specifically that the patient even pointed to that could have been, in my estimation, upsetting or troubling to her based on what she reported. And again, she herself stated there was nothing sexual in nature. Mr. Ruiz had no reason to think that he had made any untoward advance on the patient, and she had given him no indication of being dissatisfied or even seeming like she was shutting down or had been put off by something during the appointment. So it was shocking to him, and that's why he followed up as he is required to do. The investigator found no support for the allegations. She noted that the patient had presented for three prior sessions and returned without complaint. She was showing subjective improvement. Manual contact that the patient complained of was acceptable by the standard of care. The patient attested Mr. Ruiz did not say anything of sexual in nature. And it was noted by the investigator that the patient's medical history may be contributory to her perceptions. And that includes antidepressants, antipsychotic medications, and a PTSD medication for PTSD-associated nightmares. What wasn't noted in the investigative report was that the colleague, Dr. Scotto, who was present and in close proximity in the same room with Mr. Ruiz, had provided a witness statement supporting that he was professional and appropriate, and that he was engaging in sound clinical judgment the entire time. Mr. Ruiz vehemently denies these accusations. Obviously, it's been an upsetting experience for him and his family. It is a family practice. His wife is always there. His children are always there. And so we're urging the board on that alone to dismiss the case. The investigation then resulted in a number of new findings. These are, again, stemming from the investigation, not any patient complaint. And we have provided a rebuttal to each of those, but I just wanted to highlight a few things. First off, that there was no harm to the patient as a result of these claimed deficiencies. The patient consented to treatment that she received, and she was showing improvement. The first finding was about informed consent not being documented. Informed consent is a conversation that takes place, and it was noted that there was an informed consent conversation that was documented on the date of the initial assessment. So that conversation did take place, but since learning of the board's concern, Mr. Ruiz has adopted and implemented a new informed consent form into his practice. Regarding the initial evaluation supporting the treatment interventions, this was a highly severe, highly irritable low back pain patient. And so Mr. Ruiz was really trying to treat her chief concerns and primary goals at the outset of treatment. He was cognizant to not over-test just to check boxes and get certain baseline metrics when he didn't feel it was in the best interest of the patient. He was worried that it could lead to aggravating her symptoms, reluctant and causing some reluctance to return. He felt it was more substantiated to do a more thorough assessment once that chief concern had been addressed and it was actually improving. But he does recognize that this is, you know, the standard of care and best practice to try and get as much information at the time of the initial evaluation. Regarding the home exercise billed as therapeutic, we provided support for billing code 97110 for the home exercise instruction. We provided literature on this point. Mr. Ruiz also took a course on proper coding to support that the use of that code. And then finally, the claim that the goals of care are not specific, objective, and measurable. The goals of this treatment with this patient were alleviation of her impairments and functional limitations and to return to pain-free activity daily living. It was noted that she wanted to care for her family and her home with her domestic duties, and a number of domestic duties were detailed. Mr. Ruiz recognizes that it's ideal to do quantifiable measures as much as possible. But it is noted certainly that she was having objective improvement, and the investigator agreed with that. I just want to conclude by saying that Mr. Ruiz is committed to lifelong learning. He's very proud of his profession and his license, and he took this allegation very much to heart. Both the initial criticisms, or the initial complaint and the subsequent criticisms from the investigation. He welcomes any insights from the board. He's already implemented changes into his practice, but there is no support for the initial allegation. And the subsequent findings were minimal and not significant deviations from the standard of care, and there's no harm to the patient. So we are requesting that this case be dismissed. Mr. Ruiz is here for any questions that the board may have.
Thank you. Does anyone have any questions for Mr. Ruiz?
I have a question in terms of the patient's, the complainant's comment about the questions that he was asking were over the top. My understanding in terms of Pablo's training is the Maitland approach. So for those that are not PTs, that approach is trying to get at the heart of what's going on with this patient. And as we see in the notes, this person is presenting with low back pain that's very severe and very irritable. So in terms of the investigative aspect of trying to figure out what's going on and what things bother that patient, I'd like to hear from Mr. Ruiz about the questioning that he asked, and if that was his goal in terms of the questioning specific to physicians and the severe and irritable patient.
Thank you very much. First of all, thank you, board, very much for the opportunity. And yes, John, you're exactly right. The focus in the questioning was exactly that. I needed to get down to the heart of how severe, how irritable to determine what my working hypothesis is. Am I going to continue with an approach that's going to be physically active, or am I going to assist primarily with teaching, calming, and desensitizing the severity of symptoms? And really that was the primary goal for the questioning. The questioning was to determine my role and how physically active are you? How physically active are you on the weekends? And are you prolonged seated? Are you physically active doing particular activities at home, whether it's in the house or yard work? So, John, you're exactly right. My focus was to determine those two primary components of what I perceived was a potential emerging discogenic problem. And that was the focus for the questioning.
And do you feel that the patient misunderstood that line of questions and that's what led her to feeling this way and making this complaint?
The questioning was clear and the responses back were clear. I never got any type of a vibe from the patient, any kind of an emotional connection. She answered questions appropriately that led me then to provide proper instruction. So I never got any kind of indicator that the things were not understood. Everything seemed to me like well understood and proper.
And then in regards to the comment about touching her leg and as you were moving from one place to the other, I've had massages and the same thing occurs there. Is that a standard type of practice that you do?
Absolutely. That is standard, and it is usual and customary when you're working on the McManus table. For those who don't understand, the McManus table is all mechanical. It is not electric. And when you disengage all of the components, it moves in multi-directions. It is imperative that the patient being prone, unable to see, All they are going by is their hearing and their feel. So it's imperative to me that when I speak with the patient, I lower myself a little bit. I don't go into a whisper, but I don't want to startle. And at the same token, putting my hands on the appropriate portion, which was done by her ankles, by the way, because that's how you engage and facilitate the table. And so my contact, whether I move to the left or the right or the posterior part of the table, it's imperative that I stay in contact because of the table's capacity to have a tail end that is very mobile. And so I never want to lose touch with that person as I work my way around to the left and right and posterior part of the table.
So the patient could potentially feel like they're falling off the table or that there's nothing there. So you're giving her support as you're moving around.
Once my hands come off the table, once my hands come off the patient, vulnerability increases because exactly right. There's an active mobile table with no surrounding assistance. It is imperative that I stay in contact with them, that I communicate in a low tone. This was a patient that, again, high severe, high irritability, and a potential emerging disc. I wanted to do everything within my power to settle down the situation. And she was only 4 visits into it and progressing on each and every visit.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other questions?
Mr. Ruiz, what kind of changes have you made to your practice in regards to your documentation since the situation came up?
Great, thank you. As my attorney mentioned, we've gone ahead and implemented a formal consent, informed consent document that requires patient signature. The billing component, I'm always in close contact with our billing agency to make sure that the appropriate code goes with the description. And so we're constantly in communication with that person to address any of that. The one thing I will say as far as the documentation goes, as far as the goals of the specific objective and measurable component is that on this particular case, I wish I had included the oswestry, and the oswestry was taken by the patient. This is a functional tool that's a fill out form by the patient. I wish I had used that in my goals just to make certain that the patient understood and that in this case, the board understood that there was a measurable data. And, she scored only a 40% out of 100. So to put something in place that would have stated improved out West score by 50% would have at least filled in the important component of having a measurable data in my objective goals, which also has the pain rating scale. I could have used that as well. So that's been implemented as well, sir.
Excellent. What about in regards to cloning of documentation? The assessments seem to be a lot of the same information over and over again. From visit to visit, I mean, from initial evaluation to the last daily note, the assessment is pretty much the same. Has anything changed regarding that?
I've made sure that I've added more of my commentary in reference to assessing the progression of that patient per visit on a more consistent schedule than I have in the past. Absolutely. That's the learning component that I've instituted from this whole situation.
And have you taken, I heard that you took a course regarding billing. Have you taken any courses regarding documentation?
I have. And the titles are, you can let me get the folder real quick. It was a coding course. One of them was a coding course. I took 4.5 hours. Let me just see what it's titled. One of them is titled The Common CPT Codes for Physical Therapy, and the other course is Documentation, Everything After the Evaluation Until Discharge. So there was 4.5 hours of coursework that I followed up on as a result.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other questions? So I feel like Mr. Reese's narrative comments back were incredibly thorough, and I got a lot out of them. And so I think I'm going to move to dismiss this case.
I'll second that.
Any other discussion? Okay, I think we're ready, Judy.
In case 2414, Pablo Ruiz, PT, it's been moved and seconded to dismiss. Dr. Bustillo?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
Dr. Hike?
Yes.
That motion passes.
Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for being here. And then we'll move on to the preliminary reviews. Our first one is DG.
And I do believe DG is present for my briefing. DG is a physical therapist assistant. He was arrested on February 9th of 2024 on suspicion of DUI after a single car accident and failing the field sobriety test. His subsequent blood alcohol level was documented as 0.32 on March 14th of 2024. And due to those results, the Maricopa County Sheriff's Office forwarded the results and charges were then filed with the Maricopa County Attorney's Office. And that takes actually several months for that process to happen. So he was formally charged with two counts of DUI and two counts of extreme DUI on 7/15/24. So he's basically arrested but wasn't charged then until later. He did self-report the charges to the board on 7/19/24, so he did meet the 10-day regulatory requirement. A little bit of background about DG. He moved to Arizona from Washington in 2021. He received his Arizona PT certificate by universal recognition from Washington State. He's practiced as a PTA since 2014. He stated to me that he has no other previous arrest, and he is currently working as a PRN in an acute comprehensive rehab setting here in Phoenix. He has maintained his sobriety, he states, since the accident. He did provide you a written statement and supporting documents for you to consider. His next court date is actually tomorrow, unless it's changed, and he, on his own volition, completed 16 hours of alcohol education. But given the results of the blood alcohol level of 0.32, the board is requested to determine what action, if any, you would like to take regarding this matter. It's for your review at this time.
Thank you. DG, are you willing to answer questions from the board?
Yes, ma'am.
Great. Thank you. Are you doing any type of support to help maintain your sobriety, going to meetings or...
Yes, ma'am. I've been doing that as well as confiding with my pastor, my family. This is a very embarrassing thing for myself and my family. My sobriety is a huge factor for that. I've never had issues with alcohol. It was just a very poor decision under the circumstances, and I'm looking just to move forward. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Great.
And yes, my court date is tomorrow to find out what will come forth with the prosecution.
So you could potentially pend this and wait and see what the court says. You can take no action or you can open a case. I think, Mr. Harris, is that correct?
That is.
So if we wanted to continue it, then we would have to open a case and then no.
Not necessarily.
We can continue it and pending the court decision and then see what happens.
Yeah, I can bring it back to you with information on what the court has decided. You know, if he's going to plead guilty to a certain number of the charges, then what the court has decided, you know, the probationary requirements are going to be. Again, the only reason I brought this forward, he did file within the 10 days, but the blood alcohol level in the past, I've brought those forward to you
right.
as being somewhat problematic.
Yeah.
If I may say something, on that day that things had arrived, I spent 13 years in the United States Marine Corps. I was seeing some friends that were in town for the U.S. Open or the Open here. I made a poor decision. I'm not trying to make excuses for what I did. I do not have a problem with alcohol or drugs. I certainly want to take responsibility for everything that I've done. And I'm willing to take any agenda that you guys want to push forward and whatever the state recommends as well.
Yeah, I think our biggest concern is that with the blood alcohol content that high, it's amazing that you are actually still standing. So our concern always is to protect the public that you may be treating. And if there's any, you know, alcohol use around you know, patient treatment. But I feel like, you know, I think the continued support is really helpful and needed. But I also feel that, you know, maybe continuing this until after the court date so we have more information would be helpful.
Yes, ma'am.
How do others feel about that?
I'd agree.
All right, so I'll move that we continue this until after the court date and we have more information.
Second.
Any further discussion? All right, Judy.
I just want to place into the record that Dr. Hike exited the meeting at 11:59 a.m. It's been moved and seconded to continue this matter until after DG's court date. Dr. Bastillo?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
That motion passes.
Good. Good luck, DG, tomorrow in court.
Thank you for your time.
Okay, and our final preliminary review is for WB.
And I don't believe either WB or the patient EA are going to be in attendance. So the briefing is, this is a patient EA who alleged that WB, who is a physical therapist, treated her for 15 to 20 minutes, but he billed her for 40 minutes of treatment time. The treatments in question occurred in May of 2023. The patient also alleged that the owner of the clinic, who she believed was a physical therapist, treated her in an unprofessional manner. The owner of the clinic provided a response to the complaint, which was included in your review materials. WB, who again is a physical therapist, also stated that he is essentially retired from practice at this time. He did renew his Arizona license, but he rarely works And those shifts that he does work are per diem. And he stated to me that he probably will not continue to work in the field of physical therapy in the very near future. He states he has never had a patient complaint in his 47 years of practice. The patient record was also included for you, but I only completed a high-level review of the record since this was a preliminary review. I was looking specifically at the allegation of what she stated she received as 15 to 20 minutes of treatment, but was being billed for 40 minutes. She did receive 3 treatments, and she discharged herself from services. She states to travel to Europe to take care of her ill mother. The record reflects that she was making progress with therapy. She did have less pain over those 3 visits, and she was performing a home exercise program. While the initial evaluation did omit some basic assessment factors that would support the clinical plan of care, the treatment plan did appear relevant to the patient's primary complaint, and the treatment was documented of at least 40 minutes for each of those 3 sessions, for each of the 3 sessions that she participated in. So the board is requested to determine what action, if any, to take regarding this matter. So either take no action or open a case for further investigation.
And I want to add, I'm sorry, that the patient is here. Hello.
Hello.
The patient is here. Yes.
Thank you, EA. Appreciate your participation.
So I'm here to answer if you have any question for me.
Does anyone have any questions for EA?
Yeah, I'm kind of curious, EA. So you had mentioned that WB worked with you for about 15 to 20 minutes, but then billed for 40 minutes. Were you in the clinic for 40 minutes working with anybody else other than WB, or were you only in the clinic for 15 to 20 minutes and then you left?
Okay, thank you. It's a good question. So first of all, in the first session, WB, the physical therapist, he looked at my MRI, and I had a slapped hair in my right shoulder. And he said that physical therapy will not help me, that the only thing could help me, it would be a surgery. But my surgeon, you know, she referred me to physical therapy. And I kind of said that because I was referred by my surgeon, but my doctor, I said I would proceed with physical therapy. Maybe, you know, the treatment that I got from him, I do not blame WB on anything, but he was kind of neglecting me. He, during those 3 sessions, he told me do this, and then she disappeared. She went somewhere else. I don't know if he treated another patient at the same time or he just departed. And second, we're never 40 minutes, not even close. It was 15 to 20 minutes. I don't know if they have video recording, but that's what it was. And then I left. I don't know if I had some improvement. I don't remember. But, you know, I had to go to Europe to take care of my mother who had a mini stroke. It was transitory ischemic attack. You know, I had to leave quickly. And, you know, I was scheduled, I think on May 15th, 2023, I was scheduled a 4th session. It was on Saturday morning. I got the news, I think, on Friday night. And on Saturday morning, I called the physical care for physical therapy. Nobody picked up the phone. I left a voice message that I needed to cancel and I needed to leave the country for emergency. But nevertheless, later they billed me $25 for that session, for that 4th session. It's just, you know, I was not in the country. I was not in the U.S. on that day because I had left. I had to leave. It was emergency. And then, you know, what actually bothers me much more, they sent me a higher bill in April, I think March or April 2024. Like, you know, 10 months later. And I talked to the Blue Cross Blue Shield, my healthcare provider, And, you know, I even talked, they escalated the case. I talked to the, her name is, one moment, Sherry. And Linia, the initial for the last name. And she told me that she had talked to Carefree Physical Therapy too about this case. And they were not very nice to her. And Sherry, the regional, she's the regional manager for Blue Cross Blue Shield. Maybe you can contact her. She encouraged me to file a claim, a report, to file the case with you, and she gave me the contact information, the phone number, and I think the website, the phone number. I think she gave me the phone number. That's how, you know, I just started this case. And what is important again, I called, as soon as I got that hired bill, I called the Carefree Physical Therapy. It was in April, I think April 9th, or I included the date in my report, in my claim. And, you know, that woman, she was very rude to me. She didn't give me her name. She said she was the owner of Carefree Physical Therapy. That's what she said. You know, she was very rude to me. At the end, she wished death to my mother when I explained to her that my mother had a TIA and I had to leave. And it was absolutely inappropriate, immoral to charge me $25 for that. You know, it's not the money. It's a small amount of money. But, you know, the fact that in this situation, they charged me. And then she talked to me so rudely. It was a short conversation on the phone because I couldn't talk to her anymore. She hung up on me eventually, you know, and I couldn't talk to her anymore. So I, of course, I didn't go back there. I just can't, you know, it is so unethical. She's a care, she's a medical care provider. She should be empathetic. She should be nice to patients or at least neutral. That woman, she was not nice. She was rude to me. She was impolite. And she was impolite, she was rude, extremely rude to my mother, who she had never met in her life.
So I'd like to be able to, if I could just interject, I'd like to give the board a little bit of background as it relates to what EA is telling about what has happened. When EA first filed the complaint, she did file it as a billing dispute. And I informed EA that, you know, based on the original complaint, the board really doesn't have jurisdiction over billing disputes. And so she did say, though, that she believed that the owner of the practice was unprofessional in her communication with her. And so I'd asked EA to provide information about who she talked to and specific details of what she believed was unprofessional behavior. So I called the clinic and spoke with the owner of the practice, who is a physical therapist, and she provided a statement, which is in your review materials. Based on the owner of the practice, she indicated that it was not the owner that spoke to EA. It was the front office person who is not a physical therapist. So we would not potentially have jurisdiction over that person's unprofessional conduct. So really, I focused on, in this preliminary review, not a billing dispute, the outstanding $25. I mean, I have informed EA that we, as a board, do not get involved in billing disputes. The focus of what I put forward to the board was going to be related to billing practices, related to what did she receive, if she was telling me that she only received 15 minutes of therapy, but she was billed for 40. That's a different issue. And that's what I'm putting forward to you.
And that's
I just wanted to clarify what she's telling you and what our conversation had been prior to her filing then a second complaint. Because I denied the first complaint because it was exclusively a billing dispute. And then she came back and said, well, really, there was this other issue where I only received 15 minutes. But I was billed for 40.
And that's what I'm trying to gather here is, was it you walked in the door, you were there for 15, 20 minutes, and then you left? Or was it you walked in the door, you were there for 15, 20 minutes with the PT, and then you spent the rest of the time with somebody else in the clinic? That's kind of what I want to determine here.
Yeah, right. Of course. No, I spent 15, 20 minutes there and left.
Okay, so you were only in the clinic for 15 to 20 minutes.
Yeah, I was in the clinic like from, no, you know, I came, maybe I had to wait for five, I don't remember, for five, maybe 10 minutes, you know, before they let me in. And then when they start, when WP, my physical therapist, started the session, I stayed 15, 20 minutes there. He stayed with me very little. He showed me what to do this. He gave me weights. It was his weights, you know, and usually. And then she kind of went somewhere, and then she came back, showed me maybe something else. Then she left, and then she came back and said, that's it. I was even surprised. I asked at least once, I remember, asked, that's it. But, you know, because she said, you can go, I left. But it was never close to 40 minutes. It was never even 30 minutes. I remember that very well. It was very short. By the way, later in Europe, I had physical therapy for my shoulder.
Right. We're not, we're not.
Yeah. Okay.
We're not.
Sorry.
Talking about that.
Those were 40, 45 minutes. Those were, yes. I mean,
so
in Europe.
Did the physical therapist touch you? Did he do manual work with your shoulder? Before you did exercises or after?
No manual work. No. He gave me usually weight, small weight, you know, like 1-2 pounds, something like that. Well, I think it was 1 or 2 pounds. And she showed me what to do, and then she left, and then she came back, showed me something else, and she spent with me maybe, I don't know, five minutes, maybe 7 minutes, you know, showing me what to do. And then she left, and I was doing by myself. I was working out by myself. You know, that's what it was. But the total length of my session, it was, I would say, 15 to 20 minutes.
Yeah, this one's hard without WB here, I feel. The notes substantiate a 40-minute, 45-minute treatment very easily. But if we don't have the therapist telling us that he did provide manual treatment because that was billed for, in addition to exercises, I don't know that we can.
I think because she told me in the third session, she told me that physical therapy won't help me. Only surgery will help me. She was wrong, by the way. I'm fine now. My shoulder is fine now. Thank God. And I didn't have a surgery. But because she told me that, she kind of neglected me. You know, she thought maybe I can assume that she thought, why would I work on her? You know, if she wants, I can kind of superficially do something, but she didn't work really well with me because she didn't think that it would help me. You know, maybe that's why. But again, I don't know for sure. It's just what I thought at that moment.
Sure. Great. Thank you.
And again, what really bothers me, that phone conversation, that woman, if I talk to the owner, maybe I can recognize your voice, because I was completely stressed out after that phone call, completely. It was a low voice, low female voice, and she said she was the owner, and she didn't give me her name. Usually the receptionist would introduce herself and give her name, probably. That person didn't give me her name. It was a woman, low voice. I called,
okay.
I made a phone call, I took their phone number. I think it was I cannot say for sure, but she said she was the owner of this.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, we heard you.
And it was a really bad conversation. If she really was the owner, even, you know, it is an employee.
Okay, I think you want to let the board talk about this a little bit now. We've heard you and you're repeating. Okay.
Okay, I'm sorry. Yeah, sure.
Okay. Any thoughts, Giovanni?
Yeah, I mean, I'm in agreement with you. It's a little hard to make a decision without WB here. I mean, looking at his notes, I agree with you. The treatment that he's billing for is substantiated. I always get a little bit thrown off when I look at time in and time out, and it's the same exact thing every single time.
Right.
So that makes me a little suspicious on what he's doing with that. So, I mean, I'd kind of like to be able to pick his brain and, you know, see what was going on in his mind when he provided the treatment.
Yeah. So, we could move Mindy then to, like, or Mr. Harris to open a case then for, like, an initial review?
Yes.
Or would this have, okay.
And do you want me to cite the billing term?
Documentation? Because she's saying he didn't manually work with her. His notes are saying he did. I want to hear him say it.
Do you want documentation or do you want fraudulent billing?
For the documentation.
Documentation? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Do we need to move this to an initial review then?
Just to open up a complaint.
Just case. To open up a complaint.
Yeah. Open a case.
A case.
Okay. So move to open a case.
Second.
Any further discussion? Okay. I think we're ready, Judy.
It's been moved and seconded to open a case against William Brown. Dr. Bastillo?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
That motion passes.
Thank you very much, EA, for participating.
Thank you for having me and listening to me. And I'm sorry, I was emotional. It was because of that phone conversation. I'm sorry about that.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. So we've gotten through most of our business. We're up to board business and reports. Miss Judy.
Yes. So the renewal season, that is the hot button topic right about now, considering we are days from its expiration. So at this point, we have, as of, I did not write down the correct time frame, but it was this morning, early this morning before this meeting, we had received 74 renewals that included 11 canceled and 2 telehealth. So realistically, we are 13 below that. So of PTs, we have 5,851 of PTs have renewed, which is about 76%. And we have 1,810 PTAs, which is roughly 24% of all of the licensed and certified individuals. At this point, we have yet, they've probably been coming in steadily through this meeting, but as of this morning, we still had 1,726 active, which included 5 that are currently in a probationary status that had not yet renewed, 120 of the inactive not practicing individuals, and 50 of the inactive retired individuals who have not yet renewed. We have been sending through the new system because it's something that directs them to their licensee portal directly. To get established and get that pulled together, we sent a 60, a 30, and then a 7-day reminder. We have supplemented that with at least one, and there will probably be more emails go out, blast emails from board staff. We are hoping that they all make it in before the deadline. We've, of course, received an increase in phone calls, emails, all of that. most common issues tend to be that they are not using an email address to access the system that is the one that they have provided on file for the board. So that's typical. We see that on a fairly regular basis every renewal season. So we're on our way. We would like to see those numbers higher given the fact of the number that hasn't yet renewed, which is roughly 20%. So we'll continue to push. We'll continue to answer emails, answer phone calls, and keep it moving. Any questions about renewals?
Judy, did you say only 24% of PTAs have renewed?
No. I'm sorry. Of those that have renewed, 76% are PTs, 24% are PTAs.
Got it. Okay. Well, got a little nervous there.
I know. I heard that coming out of my mouth at that moment. I'm like, wait a minute, that's not right.
And then I went through and I did my renewal, and I noticed that there was a lot more questions on there than in the past. Was that just to start gathering data?
Those are the DHS questions. So the board has historically, since the 2020 renewals, been asking workforce questions. Those requirements have been placed in rule now, and it's under the umbrella of the Department of Health Services. So all regulatory boards, all healthcare boards have to ask those questions. So it's not necessarily anything that impacts the renewal itself per se. It's data collection that we will in turn have to turn over to DHS.
Okay. Got it.
Yeah, we are getting a lot of questions about those.
Yeah, the question I have been getting from a lot of people was, do they have to enter an MPI number? Because no. A lot of PTAs don't have an MPI number. So.
No. The only things that have to be entered are indicated by the red asterisk as a required field.
Yeah, and that's what I noticed when I filled it out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, but that becomes then a part of the individual practitioner's profile in the system. Therefore, those answers will be retained and can be updated at any renewal cycle. I don't think that they can access them directly just from their portal, but they are part of the renewals. So next cycle, those will pre-populate, and it will be up to the practitioner to edit them. And one of the attestations indicates that at the end as well.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Anything else? I did look to see that everybody has renewed.
Do we have to pick an audit number or not yet? That'll be the next meeting?
That'll probably be the next meeting. We do this in increments. We
works for me.
One hurdle on to the next one.
As long as you leave me out of it.
So any other questions about renewals? All right. So then the next thing is just the number of licenses and certificates issued in July. Given that it is renewal season, those numbers are lower. Those numbers are typically lower in July in a renewal year. Individuals waiting until they don't have to get licensed and renew all at the same, in the same breath, basically.
Yeah.
And that brings us to future agenda items.
So will we need to revise the mission statement for October?
We will.
Then?
Mm-hmm. We will. Mm-hmm.
And this isn't an agenda item, but I have a question. So we have two board meetings in October, October mm-hmm. 1st and the 29th. Just mm-hmm. want to make sure my calendar's correct.
Yes, we moved the September meeting mm-hmm. because both Mindy and I are going to be out of the country.
Yep.
Anything else? Well, that brings us to adjournment.
Well, awesome.
I do have a
re-adjourn. Oh. Did we put anything down for the future agenda items, or was it just a discussion
for the put review of the mission statement?
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right, back to adjournment.
I'm back to adjournment.
I'll second.
It has been moved and seconded to adjourn. Dr. Bastillo?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
That motion passes. We will adjourn the meeting at 12:30 p.m. and we will stop the recording at that same time. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for your